It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up later, a new report shows there are fewer political ads on TV in this election than there were in 2010. We'll talk to a political scientist about what this means for the election.
First, we continue our series of conversations with the candidates running for Attorney General of Wisconsin. It's the first open race for the position since 2002, as current Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen announced he wouldn't be seeking another term.
There are three candidates seeking the office. We've already heard from two of them, Republican Brad Schimmel and Libertarian Tom Nelson. Now we turn to the Democrat in the race.
Susan Happ is the district attorney of Jefferson County, and she's the Democratic candidate for Attorney General of Wisconsin. Susan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, we've had you on once before, back in the primary race. Right off the bat, I'll ask you the same question I started with then. Why are you running for Attorney General of Wisconsin?
Well, and my answer hasn't changed, you know. I ran for Attorney General because I decided that Wisconsin citizens deserved better. And part of that is, you know, the need to take politics out of that office and start working on bringing our citizens back together again. We obviously want to work together to make our communities safer, to make our citizens stronger, and I believe I'm the best candidate to do that. And part of that's, you know, based on where I come from, being a Democrat in a Republican county and being able to point to my record and show that, you know, I have a willingness and a history of working together with people on both sides of the aisle.
The two other candidates, we have Republican Brad Schimmel and Libertarian Tom Nelson. Other than the party label, what sets you apart from your opponents?
Well, certainly, you know, my background. I mean, you know, we came through a tough three-way primary, as you know, and, you know, unlike my Republican opponent, you know, I wasn't handpicked by my political party. You know, I won the nomination in a tough three-way primary, and the people chose me. And so, as I've been saying from the very beginning, you know, this is about bringing our citizens back together, and it's about, you know, being able to earn votes not just from my Democratic base, but independents and Republicans, you know, earning their trust and keeping that trust.
The latest Marquette University Law School poll suggests that this is a really close race. It's neck and neck, but a good majority of Wisconsin voters are still unfamiliar with you and your opponents, don't know enough about you maybe to form an opinion. What are you doing to reach out and introduce yourself and make a name among the voters?
Well, we're doing a lot of the same work that we did in the primary, which is, you know, traveling to as many places as we can and talking to folks, you know, about the issues and asking them about what issues are of concern to them. And so we're going to do the hard work, and we're going to continue talking to people, you know, about protecting their rights and about, you know, keeping our community safe, protecting consumers. All of the things that led to our success in the primary are going to be part of our success in the general election. So we're just going to keep reaching out to as many folks as we have been in the primary, just like we did then. We're going to keep doing that in the general. And we run a, you know, great, strong campaign in the primary, and we're going to keep doing that for the next 35 days.
So a big issue that's been coming out in the news lately, you've taken some heat over the last few weeks over some cases you were involved in the past, mostly relating to plea deals. Republicans or Republican-affiliated outside groups accusing you of going easy on an alleged child molester with a deferred prosecution agreement, somebody you'd had a real estate transaction with, a plea deal for a sex offender they're pointing to in 2009. How do you respond to what they're saying?
Sure. So, you know, that's not what this case really, this campaign is going to be about. What we want to know and what we want to stress to people is that, you know, I'm going to be an advocate for our citizens. I'm going to truly represent all of our citizens. And, you know, here's the problem. You know, D.A. Schimmel and I have both been attorneys for, I've been attorney for 16 years now. Schimmel's been an attorney for this, the same amount of time. And we all have cases where if there are people on the opposite side, you want to point to a particular case and try to take it out of context. You know, that's a road that I don't want to go down because, number one, it's not fair, and number two, I think it does a disservice to the voters because we know that in cases that we handle that there are plea negotiations made in virtually every case, and ultimately a recommendation is made to a court, and a court has to ultimately sentence an offender to what sentence they believe is appropriate. So there's an appropriate system of checks and balances in place. As far as the case, you know, with the land contract with my husband, that was a case where I appropriately screened myself off of the file as the ethical rules require. had no involvement in either the charging decision or its resolution, and that's what our rules require. And DA Schimmel has had a similar case that's being currently prosecuted by his office. I don't think there's anything improper in that case either. So, you know, we want to focus on the issues that matter to voters. We want to, you know, focus on reaching, you know, as many voters as possible to talk about the issues that matter, and that's primarily protecting, you know, protecting our citizens, keeping our communities safe, making sure that, yes, the next attorney general is that top cop, but there's a whole lot of things that the attorney general's office does that aren't criminal in nature. You know, they're civil in nature, and I've got a broader background than my opponent in that regard because I spent a decade in private practice handling civil matters and juvenile matters, as well as criminal matters. So I believe I've got, you know, broader experience in that regard, and that's what we want this race to be about, not about mudslinging. And I don't think the voters are going to be interested in that.
But both you and Brad Schimmel point toward your experience as prosecutors as a big part of your resume here. Isn't it fair to take the data we gain from looking at both of your records?
Absolutely, as long as we look at our records in a fair light. And I think that's the problem with taking, you know, one case or a second case and viewing them, you know, as snippets without looking at the full picture. And so I think it does a disservice to the voters if you take a case and simply, you know, summarize the case and say, well, here's what happened in that case without knowing all of the facts. So certainly our records are fair to look at. I mean, look, we've both been frontline prosecutors. We've prosecuted, you know, homicide cases and sexual assaults and internet predators, heroin dealers, and some really violent people. And, you know, I spent the last 6 years of my life dedicated to making Jefferson County a safer place to live. And, you know, I'm proud of my record in that regard.
So as Attorney General, if elected, you'd be working closely with the governor. It could be Scott Walker, could be Mary Burke. It's a very close race there. How do you see the relationship between the governor and the Attorney General? And could you work with someone from the opposite party?
I absolutely could work effectively with any governor, regardless of his or her party. I have a proven record of working across party lines, you know, to get the job done. You know, as I said in the beginning, I'm the only elected Democratic official in my courthouse, but I've been able to work with the Republican officials, you know, in my county because public safety is not a partisan issue. And so, you know, I've worked with my Republican sheriff and others in my courthouse to help save taxpayers over $250,000. And so I've never been afraid to work with people on the other side of the aisle. In fact, you know, I have a great record of doing just that. In terms of the relationship with the governor, I mean, I do have a little different view than that. I know that my opponent has said that he would be a good complement to the governor. And while you certainly work with the governor, the attorney general's office is a distinct branch of government, and it can and should serve as an appropriate check and balance on the governor. So and regardless of who becomes governor, I'm confident I can have a great working relationship with our next governor.
Let's get into some of the issues the next attorney general would face. The state's voter ID law has changed some since the last time we've talked to you. It's now in place for the election you're participating in. There is talk potentially of more challenge, maybe taking to the Supreme Court. Do you, as attorney general, defend the state's voter ID law in the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, you know, the attorney general does have the duty to defend state laws, but, you know, like my district attorney oath, I also take an oath to uphold the Constitution. So if the legislature passes a law that I firmly believe to be unconstitutional, you know, I cannot ethically defend it. So, you know, this case is still evolving in terms of our current voter ID law. I have concerns, as I've said previously, that it is unconstitutional because we have three very clear constitutional requirements that voters in Wisconsin must have to be eligible to vote, and our current voter ID law adds a fourth. It adds the governmental issue, photo ID. And the concern I've got with the law right now, with the injunction being lifted so close to the general election now, is that we've only got a little bit over a month here for upwards of 300,000 folks to try to get that governmental issued ID. And as we look at the cases that's progressed through our courts now in Wisconsin, we have one federal court who agreed with my concerns about its constitutionality, and now we have another that's disagreed. So obviously, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court may decide this issue, and certainly Wisconsin and I would be bound by that decision, whatever it may be.
A related issue, another Wisconsin law, a constitutional amendment, actually, that could end up in the U.S. Supreme Court, the same-sex marriage ban. Would you defend that before the Supreme Court?
That one, you know, that one I have a bigger issue with, because it is, it has been found to be unconstitutional, not just by, you know, the court in Wisconsin, but by other courts. In that case, it's true that the voters did pass the constitutional amendment to define marriage as between a man and a woman. The problem with that is we still have to comport with the United States Constitution. And one court after another has struck down these types of laws. And so that our ban against same-sex marriage, I believe, to be violative of the Equal Protection Clause. And that is a law that I would not defend. And look, I want to be clear. When we talk about the Attorney General's obligation to defend laws, that is absolutely true. But as I said, if there is a law that is in direct conflict with the Wisconsin or the United States Constitution, then you have to take a harder look at that. And there have been previous attorneys general who have not defended other laws, including the current attorney general, who said he would not defend the domestic partnership registry. And in fact, Attorney Schimmel has also said that he would not have defended the domestic partnership registry. So it's rare and it's the exception, but that does happen where past attorneys general have declined to defend laws that they knew to be unconstitutional.
We're talking with Susan Happ, Democratic candidate for Attorney General, and you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234.
Do you have a question for Susan Happ, or are you wondering where she stands on an issue? You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll pick up with Susan Happ in just a moment, but first, here's a look at headlines with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking with Democratic Attorney General candidate Susan Happ. She's one of three candidates running for that office. If you've got a question for her or wondering where she stands on a particular issue, you can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We go to our callers now. We've got Larry on the line in New Berlin. Larry, hi.
Yes, I've been a lifetime Democrat, and we moved here about 4 years ago, and I noticed that it seems to be more in the drink. And anyway, I read a little bit of a description before the primary of her stand on drunk driving. It sounds like she would not want to make it a felony, and I'd like to have her explain that. And I'll take the answer off the air.
Larry, thanks for the call. And Susan, I think you were talking about first-time offenses.
Correct. And so it came up a lot in the primary whether Wisconsin should criminalize first offense drunk driving. And I think what Larry just talked about was making it a felony. And I certainly wouldn't support making first offense drunk driving a felony. Currently under Wisconsin law, if you get to a fourth offense and the previous offenses within 5 years, it becomes a felony. So you'd be making probably three or four different other OWI-type offenses felonies. But the basic answer that I have with regard to criminalizing it in the first place is that we know that drunk driving is both a law enforcement and a cultural issue here in Wisconsin. And so in determining penalties for drunk driving, we have to focus on what strategies work best to reduce incidents of drunk driving. And we don't have evidence to show that criminalizing, in other words, making someone a convicted criminal and potentially putting them in jail for some short period of time, actually is going to deter a driver from getting behind the wheel. There's no question that first offense drunk driving is a danger, not just to the driver, but to innocent people on the roadways. But the person gets behind the wheel knowing that they could kill him or herself. They could kill a passenger, an innocent motorist, and they could either die or spend decades in prison, and they get behind the wheel nonetheless. So until we had that kind of evidence in terms of deterrence, I wouldn't support the criminalization of the first offense, drunk driving. If people learn, you know, from their contact with the justice system, I think that's a plus. What I do know is that we absolutely have to look at increasing the minimum penalties for our repeat drunk drivers. And we need to do a better job of educating our kids about the dangers of drinking and driving. And so I have talked very candidly about the fact that we should be looking at increasing those minimums. If you have a fourth-time drunk driver in Wisconsin, they can serve as little as 60 days in jail, and we know that that's woefully inadequate. So there's no question, Larry, that we definitely have to do more to address both the cultural issue and the obvious law enforcement and public protection issues of drunk driving in Wisconsin.
One issue, a priority you've highlighted in your campaign is protecting children online and putting a stop to online predators. What would your plan involve?
Right. So we know that predators are prowling the internet, and we also know that the Department of Justice is uniquely situated to investigate these offenders, to get those cases over to local law enforcement and to district attorneys so that these offenders can be prosecuted quickly. So what we want to do, you know, when we talk about internet crimes against children, is have an efficient way of addressing those types of referrals that are coming in, you know, faster now than ever. As our technology has improved, so have the offenders. And so we know that we've got to have an ability to quickly process those internet crimes against children, and we've got to have protocols that focus on results and don't worry about credit, who's getting the credit for the arrests or the charges. And I believe we need a dedicated point person in the Department of Justice to work directly with agents at the Division of Criminal Investigation to make sure that these tips are timely, processed, and handed off to local law enforcement. And I'll tell you, coming from Jefferson County, another thing that we've seen here is that the Department of Justice does a great job of training law enforcement on how to investigate these crimes. The harder part of it is, in my county, we had a single officer in a county of about 85,000 people who was actually putting that training to great use. He was able to actually have offenders come to our state, to our county, intending to have sex with a 14-year-old girl, only to find a law enforcement officer. And those offenders were arrested, prosecuted, and many of them sent to prison. Unfortunately, the drain on resources from a law enforcement perspective, the time that goes into those types of investigations, is a lot. It takes its toll on these departments. And so now in my county, I have no one in my county who can actually participate in these investigations so that I can actually have these offenders arrested and prosecuted. So that is something that I think we need to look at, alternative ways so that we can provide necessary support to local law enforcement so they can continue the good work and actually implement the training that they've received.
I wanted to ask you about open government and government transparency. There have been some calls to the next attorney general to make that a priority. How would you, or would you make a commitment to open government? How would you put that into practice?
Well, absolutely. To answer your second question first, absolutely I would make that a priority. I mean, Wisconsin has a strong tradition of open government. We have some of the best laws on the books. And the reality is that I think we need to work diligently to restore the trust and the faith and the confidence that our citizens have in their elected officials. So I would take allegations of open meetings and open violations very seriously, and that would apply across the board. This is not a partisan issue. So I would aggressively prosecute anyone who betrays or violates the public trust, regardless of their political affiliation.
One of the biggest law enforcement issues that we hear about in Wisconsin lately, and this has gone to the legislature too, is heroin. What, as Attorney General, would you do to enforce the state's laws and to try to cut back on the heroin epidemic in the state?
Yeah, heroin has a death grip on every county in our state, and it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care if you are African-American or white, male, female, young, old. And so we need a multifaceted, collaborative approach to the heroin epidemic that we're seeing. And that's not an overstatement, by the way. It is an epidemic. And so we have to combine law enforcement efforts with education, prevention, and treatment. And so, you know, as a district attorney in Jefferson County, I have aggressively prosecuted the heroin dealers because they put the lives of others at risk. I've also been a founding member of my Jefferson County Heroin Task Force. I work with law enforcement, county officials, educators, and community leaders to help inform citizens and our youngsters about the dangers and availability of opiates. And so when we talk about this, it's not just heroin, it's pills as well. And, you know, education is very important. And I would take what we've been doing here in Jefferson County in terms of informing our citizens and our community leaders, and I would take that initiative statewide to make sure that every county is able to bring that information to its citizens, because it's so moving when people hear the story, for example, in my county, of a mother who lost her 17-year-old daughter to a heroin overdose. And so I think we need to bring a face, you know, to what heroin looks like, what a heroin addict looks like, because it is not the stereotypical, you know, middle-aged or older-aged white man, you know, who's transient or you know, living on the streets. It doesn't discriminate, as I said, and I think if we can help humanize the face of heroin addiction and aggressively address, you know, go after the dealers, but also work closely to rehabilitate those who are addicted in the community, we can start having a significant impact on this epidemic in our state.
Susan, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That was Susan Happ. She's the district attorney of Jefferson County. She's the Democratic candidate for Attorney General of Wisconsin. We'll have interviews with all three of those candidates up at the WPR.org website. Also, remember to check out wisconsinvote.org for election information.